Hello there, and welcome to another exciting episode of the History Rocks Cold War Special. Today we're going to focus on, in particular, America's new foreign policy known as New Look, and we're going to look at the Soviet foreign policy known as peaceful coexistence. We see some kind of shifts and movements in the development of the Cold War after 1953 with the death of Stalin. So we're going to have a look at those in a little bit more detail. But first, I'm going to start off with one juicy joke. You do know I like my Soviet jokes, of course. This one goes like this. A really scared man runs into the KGB office and wants to report at the front desk that my talking parrot has disappeared. And the KGB man looks at him and says, "That's nothing to do with us. You need to go down to the police office and report it as a criminal offence there." But the man says, "Well, excuse me, I know I need to go and report it to them, but I need you to know that I disagree with everything it says." Ba-boom! Aha, it's good. Right, okay, let's dive in, shall we? Let's jump in and have a look at New Look, peaceful coexistence. What are they? How do they come about? Because this is going to be really important when we're having a look at the period that's sometimes known as peaceful coexistence or the thaw, because you're going to be able to then report what you know, how it developed, and equally if there are any achievements of it during that period. Okay, so let's start with the Americans first of all. We have this, of course, change in leadership. Truman is out of office. President Eisenhower is voted into office in part because what he was saying about the Korean War, and he was really ripping into Truman. He was throwing Truman some shade, shall we say, over his role in the Korean War, but also China as well. So just prior to him taking office, a lot was said by John Foster Dulles, his soon-to-be Secretary of State, in the newspapers and magazines and radio about what Eisenhower's foreign policy will look like. And whilst in office, John Foster Dulles continues some of those comments on it. Now, the thing to notice, particularly if this comes up as a source question, is have a look at the sort of dates. Is it written just prior to or him being elected, Eisenhower that is? Is it written by John Foster Dulles? Because there's a certain typical threads that come through John Foster Dulles's primary sources all the time. What he says about Eisenhower, what he's trying to do is spin a line that Eisenhower is going to take a supremely firm stance in the face of communism, because it's what the American public wants to hear. You've got to see this in the context. They have lost China. It's gone. Yeah. And Truman was attacked for that. He was said to be far too soft. He didn't do enough to support Chiang Kai-shek, hence its loss. It also said that the Berlin blockade came too close to a hot war for them. That worried them. Could this happen again in future? Even though they won it, really, didn't they? But there was still some fear over that. There was fear, too, that the Americans might be losing the Cold War by the end of sort of 49-50. You know, here we've lost China. The Soviet Union's caught up in terms of nuclear capability. It's developed its own atomic bomb by 1949, and the nuclear monopoly that the Americans was enjoying up until now is gone. But also, when the Americans developed the hydrogen bomb in 52, the Soviet Union got theirs by 53. There's not really much between them at all. We've also got McCarthyism sweeping across the country. We've spoken about this earlier. There's that whole witch hunt going on for Reds under the beds within the American society. That's making everybody nervous. And of course, they're looking then for a president that's going to take a firm stance. The Korean War has shifted the American view now from Europe to Asia. It's very worried about what's developing over there. And of course, we're still in the throes of this nuclear arms race. So when you look at what Dulles is saying in the press and articles and things like that is it's a lot of hot air. He's trying to make out that Eisenhower is far more aggressive than he is. What kind of things was he attributing to him? Well, he said that Eisenhower would roll back communism, right? Now, think about that for a minute. Rollback of communism. It's not just sort of accepting where communism exists already. It's talking about moving it back, pushing it back to the point of eradicating it from perhaps Europe and Asia. Now, Eisenhower, when in office, said something like, oh, well, this could be achieved through peaceful means. What? How can you? What do they expect to happen? This is clearly Eisenhower backpedaling here, because let's face it, the communists are not just going to go, oh, yeah, all right, then. Yeah, let's not be communist. Don't be communist. All right. Yeah, sure. We'll just put all our guns and missiles and tanks down and just, you know, embrace capitalism. You know, why not? They're never going to do that. So the idea that rollback could be achieved through peaceful means is complete tut, really, at the end of the day, isn't it? But it was clearly used by Dulles to suggest that Eisenhower, when elected president, is going to take a firm stance. They also spoke about massive retaliation. So this is the idea that in the event of an attack, the Americans will use all resources, all things within its means, including nuclear weapons, to attack the enemy who has struck first. Wow. Yes, think about that, because that really would be, especially with the hydrogen bomb being several thousand times more stronger than the atomic bomb, that would really be nuclear holocaust in that event. He also spoke about brinkmanship. So, you know, the idea with this really is that they're going to play chicken with some nuclear weapons. That every, you know, to get whatever you're looking for from your enemy, you're going to threaten them with nuclear weapons to extract what it is that you're after. That's it in a nutshell, really. We also know that Eisenhower spoke about the domino theory, and that's a theory that gets adopted by all of the presidents that follow him as well. So this is the view that if one country falls to communism, then all of the other countries are going to fall as well. Now, given all of this, you'd be forgiven for thinking that Eisenhower is supremely aggressive when it comes to communism. But no, no. In fact, there's more similarity, I would say, than difference between him and Truman. He supported the idea of setting up global alliances, for instance, and having diplomatic relations and conversations. He was one of those old school sort of army generals who thinks that he can sit down on the other side of his, you know, the table to his enemy and just thrash out a deal with them. He encouraged, for sure, the creation of other global alliances for collective security, non-communist, of course. So things like the Southeast Asia Collective Defense Treaty in 1954, which, of course, involves a whole crock of countries, and at least they're teachers in, a whole crock of teachers, a whole crock of countries, things like Thailand, France, Britain, Pakistan, America, Philippines, etc. ANZUS as well, of course, in New Zealand, Australia, etc., forming an alliance, which was handy for the Americans because that helped them sort of protect Japan. Quite happy to see the formation of the FRG and its involvement in NATO as well. So Eisenhower's very keen to have global agreements of collective security amongst non-communist countries, but also is very open to the idea of opening up a diplomatic channel between the Soviet Union and America. This is no different to Truman. It was Stalin that cut off all conversation at the end of World War II. Apparently, he went completely paranoid and started accusing doctors treating him of poisoning him and sort of retreated somewhat from the scene at the end of the war. So with his death, it allows Eisenhower to have those conversations with the Americans. In addition, right, he also believes that you can kind of finance and prop up non-communist governments, exactly what Truman did with Chiang Kai-shek in China, Eisenhower was doing with Diem in Vietnam from 1954, right? So exactly the same, right? They're no different. And, of course, having the American military stationed around the globe under often the guise of NATO, this continued belief in containment, exactly the same as Truman, no different. And when it came to him being actually having the opportunity to be a bit more aggressive and put some of these policies into practice, he chose not to do it. Roll back, for instance, think of Hungary, 1956. Big uprising, right, against the communist regime. It could have quite easily been manipulated by outsiders and supported. But the Americans chose not to. As the Soviets went in with tanks and crushed the rebellion, the American response was to set up a radio station. Now, okay, yes, it's not about listening to easy listening whilst you're out rebelling on the streets. It was there to pump out propaganda and encourage them. But really, you're not going to achieve that much that way. You're certainly not going to roll back communism by creating a radio station, are you? Massive retaliation, never a popular idea. Everybody knew that that would end up in a nuclear holocaust. No Congress was ever going to support that. They respected the sovereignty of North Korea, for instance, made no changes. During the armistice, when it was signed in 54, that was the end of the matter for the Americans. So they do nothing to roll back communism there either. Yeah, okay, you might say there was a threat of nuclear weapons under Eisenhower periodically, particularly towards the end of the Korean War, which might be deemed to be brinkmanship, but the reality of him doing it, very limited. So consequently, the Americans are actually looking for an opportunity to, I guess, sit down and negotiate with the Soviet Union because they want to avoid some kind of nuclear war. And equally, their confidence has been shaken somewhat, I would say, by recent events. Plus, the depiction of Eisenhower as this sort of aggressive anti-communist is somewhat exaggerated. There's more continuance than change between Eisenhower and Truman. From the Soviet perspective, Stalin's dead. Big obstacle to any kind of negotiation or talks with the West. He's gone now because he basically retreated after the war. They felt that a lot of the foreign policy decisions that Stalin had chosen to take were poor and did more harm than good. So, for instance, the Berlin blockade was seen as a massive humiliation for the Soviet Union, according to sort of Khrushchev and his supporters, and they wanted to avoid that. The kicking out of Tito, remember Tito, the Yugoslav communist leader? Yeah. He was kicked out of Cominform in 1948 because he basically was trying to choose a different path to socialism, which Stalin disagreed with. Now, basically, the Soviet Union is looking to sort of restore and repair that relationship with them. Equally, during this collective leadership period, because Khrushchev wasn't immediately leader, let's just put that there, he was in this kind of collective leadership until he sort of elbowed himself into position by about 1956, they were looking to basically divert money away from spending on military and spend it upon consumer products and things to improve the standards of living within the Soviet Union. Essentially, they've been spending about a third of GDP. GDP is gross domestic products. So that's the value of everything that the country creates, makes. They're spending a third of that on the military. So they want to re-divert some of that money. Equally, they are looking to, I guess, avoid nuclear war as well. Nobody wants to have that. And when Khrushchev unveiled his secret speech in 1956, it's like him and the party were trying to put a bit of distance between themselves and Stalin. So they wanted to adopt a new sort of approach to the West. They ideologically justified this by saying that capitalism will inevitably collapse anyway. So what's the point in going to war with it? That was the founding stone, the foundations of peaceful coexistence. They read Karl Marx's Das Kapital, Volume 1-3, which I'm sure you do during your bedtime reading, of course. And their interpretation of it is that capitalism kind of creates the seeds for its own demise. You know, it angers and gives lots of grievances to workers and things who will form their own trade unions, and then they'll form political movements and they'll overthrow the governments and the people above anyway. So what's the point in us going to war with it, trying to undermine it? It's going to happen anyhow. So that way he can justify shifting the money and everything else away from the military into other things. Now, as it happens, military expenditure is really maintained really under Khrushchev throughout the period. It's still relatively high. But you can see what he's trying to do there. He's trying to remove some of the worst excesses of Stalinism in society, and that extended to his foreign policy as well. So because of these shifts, you've got two countries that still seemingly look very hostile to each other, beginning to drift towards each other to this sort of meeting point in the middle. So a lot of the issues, therefore, are going to be about how much was achieved during that period of where they come together in the middle, how much was achieved during peaceful coexistence and the thaw. And we'll look at that next episode. So it has been an absolute delight having you with me this afternoon. I do hope you found it useful. And tune in again very soon, and we will find out more of this lovely mystery known as the Cold War. Take care now.